Spoiler alert, I watch a lot of Bravo, and when I'm not watching Bravo, I'm sitting in the cloth having a moment of spiritual growth, and when that's not happening, I'm living here in New York where there is a lot to do and not a lot of time to do it. The last thing that I want to be thinking about, let alone worrying about, is my hair. Now, I have wavy hair naturally. It also has color processing, which is surprising because I am a spiritual blonde. And as a result, I don't want to have to worry about frizz. That's why I love Way's anti-frizz cream. It works for my hair texture. It works for having wavy hair. It smells great. There are notes of bergamot, Italian lemon. You guys know I just went to Italy. It was for moments like this, violet and more. Having used a lot of products in my hair in the past, I don't like a heavy feeling, especially when you have wavy hair. That's incredibly important, which is why I love the anti-frizz cream. It makes my hair look like me just a little bit better. Way's new anti-frizz cream provides immediate frizz control that lasts up to 72 hours. It helps reduce and repair split ends. And according to a consumer perception study, 90% of participants agreed that their hair looks less frizzy. And I would like to know what that consumer perception study has to say about some original cast members of The Real Housewives of New York. You'll be way obsessed with Way's bestsellers. They're leave-in conditioner, detox shampoo, hair oil, gloss, and so much more. Frizz-free up your schedule with Way. Go to theouai.com and enter promo code Andy for 15% off any product. That's theouai.com, promo code Andy. C'est bon. If you're looking for an apology, I'm happy to give you a map.
Just like Tamara Judge, I'm going to beg to continue to be on this show for the rest of my life.
You guys, oh my God. A classic.
Sorry, Tamara. Oh, don't tell Tamara. Don't tell Tamara. Oh my God, don't tell Tamara.
Can we please? I need to get your thoughts on Tamara and Teddy Joe. We're gonna jump in, guys. You guys, it's Annie's girls. It's 295. I'm so excited. One of my
just coasting until 300. This is gonna be real loose over the next five episodes.
As opposed to the last 294, I'm so excited to be joined by one of my favorite people, favorite Bravo-holics. You know him as the host of So Bad It's Good with Ryan Bailey. Welcome back to Andy's Girls.
Woo!
Guess who it is, Ryan Bailey.
I still remember when I was nervous to talk to you. Like I was like, I told this story before. I remember hiking on Runyon, and I would like, I asked you in a DM that you didn't look at for like days to be on the podcast. And I remember you finally answered it while I was hiking when I used to exercise. And I was like, oh, and you kind of still were like tentative. You were like, hello, good to hear from you.
We'll talk about why that is offline. I always used to come from a place of yes, and now I come from a place of like side eye. I'm not quite sure yet. So there we are. But listen, first off, you look, I already told you off recording, whatever the fuck it's called, we're professionals here. You look very dashing tonight. I just need to let the AGs know you're very coiffed. I just literally walked 8 miles. I look like fucking death. And Ryan Bailey stumbles into the Zoom.
Wait. To be fair, I'm
like
in my bedroom.
TV star.
I'm in my bedroom and I showered. Like that's like I don't usually shower. And I'm wearing pants right now for the third day in
wow.
a row. And it's not the lifestyle that I want for myself, I think.
I mean, I have to say a shower in pants is like COVID black tie. So kudos to you. That's incredible. That's incredible.
Oh, I just like now I'm just like, I do have my nicer basketball shorts that I wear when I want to impress somebody.
Wait a second. Basketball shorts are nicer than pants? Wouldn't that be the opposite?
No. I'm saying,
What's happening?
I mean, by the way, style icon for me. Like it was like to show that you could. Well, no, not. I mean, just the sense that he's like not comfortable. He doesn't mind looking like me, you know,
well,
like, no, but I'm saying I don't, I mean, COVID got it to a point where you did have your nice basketball shorts. You're like, I'll put right. on the nice ones tonight because a friend is going to let me Zoom watch a TV show with
mm-hmm.
them.
Mm-hmm. I don't get an Adam Sandler vibe from you at all.
You well, you right now is like a dip. I can send you literally picture after picture where you would be like, I totally get it. I totally. In fact, I threw away some basketball shorts that were like, I think 22 years old the other day. And it was like sad. There was like an emotional, I set them on fire, like a Viking funeral and just threw them into the garbage can.
Shout out to whoever made those shorts. How do shorts last 2 decades? They're shorts. They're not meant. They're here for a good time, not a long time.
I'd like to say I care for things, but I don't. And I don't. Listen, Sarah, I literally the other day I found Beverly Hills 90210 boxer shorts. And I was like, oh, my God, I bought those when the show. And I'm not talking about the reboot.
No.
When the show came out and they were no holes. And I was like, how cool. I was like, oh, my God, these got to be like 10 years old. They were like 20 plus years old. I had to, like, I was like, I guess this isn't like, this is like a health violation at this point.
I mean, I do have some stilettos that have been through quite a ruckus. I was a Guinness girl once for a single night. It was St. Patrick's Day.
Okay, so the rumors are true.
The rumors are true. Okay. I absolutely don't know a thing about alcohol. And they gave me the responsibility of being like, here's alcohol. And I was so bad. I just literally was like, so where are you from? How are you? Like, I couldn't talk about anything.
Hey,
but I wore Manolos.
Booze, am I right?
And they had three. I was just talking about this. They had three different kinds of alcohol. I mean, I guess beer or whatever. There was like Guinness and then two other kinds. And for the life of me, I cannot recall. This came up in conversation the other day. I couldn't tell you. And we had training. Like, technically, we had to go to the thing with the place, with the stuff, and sit in a room and talk to us about beer. And then you have to do it with the tray and, like, the...
Well, Bethany Frankel, watch out. Sarah's on your tail.
Oh, my God. Yeah, it's more Bethany Bakes than Skinny Girl, I gotta tell you. I'm, like, alone in that supermarket wondering what happened. Listen... I think they just choked on water.
Sorry,
For the very first time.
Sorry.
He's down.
It's loose.
Replacement co-host.
David Bellino, we need you now.
So listen, how is life? How is LA? How is the wonderful world of Bravo on the West Coast?
Well, it airs at a different time for Bravo, so I don't know if that's... Yeah, that's a big thing.
That is a big thing.
No, LA's weird right now. It's like we're at that time. In fact, I don't know if you saw those stories last week about TomTom. Like, every celebrity known to man was at TomTom last Saturday. Like, the cast of Euphoria, like, all of the...
Robert Pattinson.
Yeah, Robert Pattinson was there for 30 minutes, supposedly, with a mask on, which is, like, great. That's what you want from your Batman. But, like, and I was like, wait a sec. Is TomTom like I always treat it like Planet Hollywood. Like, it's like, you know, yay. But like, I was like, oh my God, are we at a place where celebrities are hanging out all together in a place again? Like, are we on the other side of the COVID hump where we still, like, celebrities are hanging out proudly together? And it's at TomTom of all places?
Right. It's the latter point where I'm really stumbling. Like, did Tom, I'm so into it for them, but like, did TomTom get cool? Is it cool?
I think, well, by the way, I've always thought it was cool, but okay. I'm not cool. So, like, that cancels each other out. But I will tell you this. What cracked me up was that then there was, like, there must have been some kind of Vanderpump Rules email that went out immediately once the first cast member of Euphoria hit. Because it was, like, Lala, Stassi, Bo. They, like, ran there. They were, like, we got to get over there. Like, they're, like, huffing, like, trying to get into the door. Like, you know. I'm sure Jax probably didn't get over there in time, but I just cracked me up that they ran. And it reminded me, Sarah, I was there at TomTom the first year it opened. I was there the night Miley Cyrus was there. And I was sat next to the table with me and my buddy Jay. And we sat right next to Lisa Vanderpump in the back room. And Miley Cyrus was there with a table of her, like, dancers or something. And it was a Friday night. The place was packed when it first opened. And she was, like, smoking out of a vape. And I remember she was like, yeah, get DJ James Kennedy on the FaceTime. And, like, they called DJ James Kennedy. Tom Sandoval came in and he started breakdancing. Like, I'm not joking. He started body popping. And then Lisa Vanderpump got on the table with Miley Cyrus and danced. And I have this all on video, by the way. I think I have it somewhere on my Instagram, and they had their dogs there. I was like, this can't be healthy. And it was so crazy. I was like, this is out of, like, it was so funny watching Sandoval come in, because, and he just started popping and locking. Like, it was like he just walks in, like, always ready to pop and lock.
I literally don't know. There's so much there. It's the celebrity stand-up of Bravo stuff that I love and I cherish and I adore. But also sometimes I'm like, wait, this is our thing. Like, what's happening?
It is our thing. So it's hard when a celebrity likes it and then they have the wrong Bravo opinion. Like there was, you know what I'm saying? Like they'll be like, free Jen Shah. And I'll be like, wait, let's slow it down. Like, you know, my grandma was taken in by that. That's not, you know, and that's sometimes weird. I don't know if you've ever noticed when it's like celebrities will be like, I love it, but then they'll have the incorrect opinions.
Yeah, I mean, I think Meghan McCain and Erica is a tough look. The like riding hard for Erica at the worst moment. I was like, do we really need this right now? Is this, but it is nice to also have someone who has a difference of opinion. Like, it's like celebrities are just like us. Often they're also incorrect. So there's something to be said for that.
But isn't it funny, us as a culture, we think like, you know, from a young kid, young tyke, you're taught that celebrities know more than you. And then you turn out, you're like, oh my God, they're even bigger idiots than I am. I mean, the same with our politicians. But it's funny. By the way, Meghan McCain is hysterical because she followed me, unfollowed me, and then followed me again.
On Instagram? On Twitter?
On Instagram. Whoa, I think probably because of the Erica. I there was a time when I was really going hard on Erica Jane.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so she didn't love that so much.
I'm guessing she's back, baby.
Meghan, if you're listening,
Meghan,
go on Ryan's show and talk about Beverly Hills. I wonder what Meghan McCain thinks of Lisa Rinna. Do we know? I don't know that she's ever spoken publicly about that. I would be curious to know.
I personally took it hard when I saw Gary Jannetty and Brad at dinner with Rinna last week. I took that hard. Like I was like. You can't give Lisa this license of like, I'm, you know, like whether people think Lisa's cool or not, you know, whatever. But like, I don't know, that one hurt me for some reason. I really respect Gary Jannetty.
When it comes to Housewives triggers, is there another trigger? We know about Jax. We know about Rinna. Is there someone that people, AGs, might be potentially surprised to hear is like a no man's land for you, where you just hear about them, you see them, and you're just immediately scarred for life?
Well, I mean, I'm going to be scarred for life no matter what happens at this point. But, you know, I think, I mean, I don't know if you watch it, but Noella on Real Housewives of OC, she's a first season housewife.
Do I watch it?
I just want to make sure. I incorrectly assume people watch all of the shows on Bravo, and then it's like, but then people like say, oh, OC's not worth it. I'm enjoying OC.
I love OC this season.
It's meditative for me. It's like, I really, but Noella is doing something that I got. Like, people really came at me on Twitter for this, but I said, she's like Frankenstein. She's taken body parts of all of these different housewives. And this is what happens when you have a show that's been on for 16 years. Mm-hmm. She admits she's watched every season. Mm-hmm. So she's taken a bit here, taken a bit there, and she's creating this Frankenstein performance. And people thought I was calling her that she looked like Frankenstein. I was like, no. Like, people want to assume the worst possible thing of like, I don't think it's okay for you to compare her to a monster. I'm like, no, Frankenstein's monster was cobbled together by the parts of all of these people. And I feel like she's a housewife on steroids. And it's like, your first season, you're trying to get at Heather Dubrow, which I appreciate you're a foil for. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, slow it down. Like, the things that you're getting upset at Heather for don't even hold water. So it makes you in the end look stupid when... And the other thing, too, is everybody, if you say something negative about a housewife, they immediately think you're calling for their firing. Mm-hmm. And it's like, yo, no, I want Rinna on for the rest of my life. Like, I like getting upset. I like having something to rail against. Mm-hmm. I don't want any housewife fired, nor do they give a rip what any of us think on Twitter. But you know what I'm saying? Like, Noella just for some reason is throwing it all there, and it just still seems kind of hollow to me. Mm-hmm. It still seems, I can't still get a beat on her personality, because she's like, the thing in the OC. Her voice even is like, very like, settle on a voice, settle on a mood. I get you like to stack your ladies in pancake format. If you're watching. And by the way, you have Dr. Jen on the other hand, who's not really, you know, performed like Noella has, but this girl has a cement leg, which is amazing. She has a cement leg, and finally, we're starting to get into the intricacies of her as a housewife. This issue with Ryan, we all were going against Ryan, and then we see 2 weeks ago the episode where she got hammered and embarrassed Ryan completely, and you saw a bunch of rich people laughing at them, which is that's how I view any, like, rich people are always laughing at me. But you know what I'm saying? We finally got to see Dr. Jen. Is that, oh wow, there is something interesting here, I think. Did you feel that way at all?
I mean, the dinner scene, I think a lot of people found it cringe. I actually honestly found it, because I'm not invested in Dr. Jen or her marriage. So I was able to watch it and be like, this is like kind of interesting, almost enjoyable, in the sense that it's absolutely chaotic and you know that Heather Dubrow is losing her fucking mind. So in that sense, I actually thought it was like, it was nowhere near like a Naked Wasted situation, which we look through a different lens now than we did then, or than most of us, myself included, did then. But with, you know, Noella, it's interesting because Housewives is such a machine, and people look at it and they see fame and celebrity and potentially dollar signs and maybe escape from marriages or whatever else, new beginnings. But because it's established and been around so long and a juggernaut, it's like, how could people not study this? How could they not, yes, like the Jen Shaws, yes, of the world, like, how could they not study this? But then my question to you is, like, how do they still find unique, connected, natural, wackadoo people who are still in their little bubbles real, when so many others, including the Noellas of the world, have studied it and tried to adopt it or maybe co-opt it, tweak it, but do so in a way where it does feel like it's formulaic in personality and tone?
I know you come from an acting background as well, and I think, and I know this sounds silly, but I think it really all, it hinges on casting. It hinges on casting directors and producers that care so much, that can like read past the BS, that really care, and not just like, well, we're going to throw this up and see how it plays. Like, these people really, you know, it's weird to be in a time because of social media where all of us fans maybe, and I don't want to offend any producers listening, might have thought about it 40 different ways than they have. Like every Bravo Instagrammer or Twitter, you know, Bravo Twitter, they've gone down every pathway where sometimes I'll read shit and I'll be like, my mind didn't even go there. Mm-hmm. They're thinking, and you just hope that, because everybody talks about like, oh, how do you say Vanderpump Rules? And it's like, well, it begins and ends with casting. It begins and ends with interviewing people and seeing what they're, you know, seeing what the intricacies are. And what we know from Noella, or what we're, you know, is that she's Bronwyn's friend. And Bronwyn was somebody that was equally trying to get on the show. And what I keep saying lately is it reminds me of Saturday Night Live auditions, where every comedian in a town, you know, Andy's Lorne Michaels, every comedian in a town is trying to audition for SNL. And now you got housewives buying houses, trying to get the part, trying to show them that they got the juice. And I think that's a really interesting, because it didn't start off like that.
Yeah, and I mean, just like with SNL, the focus is typically on the ensemble. But the difficulty with Housewives is, I think it's in many ways constructed to always have a breakout. And it's like, what happens when you assume that you are the breakout star, but you don't necessarily know what that means? Because you're looking at the formula based on prior seasons that have happened with people who may or may not still be on the show. And maybe the reasons that they're not, it's like the very thing that you're trying to create within yourself, like the very thing you're trying to use as your costume for Housewives might have been the thing that ended up getting that person fired. There's no way for anyone to know that. So with Noella, I don't know, part of the charm to her for me is that she seems to be heavily manufactured. I don't believe the divorce stuff. I think that there is something else there, like the stuff that, you know, Emily has said in press, that other people have said in press. I do tend to believe that this is not the full story, but also she's a necessary iconoclast. So maybe she's winning this game. Who's to say? She's not here for a while, but she's probably here next season.
Oh, yeah. And by the way, and I want her. I mean, I almost love when they kind of settle in. You know, it's like just like actors when you see a theater, you know, a play and you're like, OK, he's settled in. They're doing the, you know, they really kind of get into the material. And I will be really interested to see what further seasons with Noella will hold. But two other examples is Leah McSweeney's first season of Housewives, where she was just like off the cuff. And you could say, oh, well, she was drinking. Yeah, she provided really crazy moments. But I think she wasn't trying to throw everything against the wall and see what sticks. She was just literally being, I believe, herself. And sometimes that was unhinged. What happens, and you know, you say the second season curse, but the second season, I think there was too much time for Leah to think about it, to think about who she was, to think about like all of these things. A good example of somebody that I thought did great, but might not have been celebrated was Crystal Minkoff. Yeah. Crystal Minkoff's first season, you know, like she had her issue with Sutton, which by the end they showed that they could be friends, which I think is inspiring. Here's somebody that wasn't desperate. Here's somebody that wasn't throwing everything against the wall. And I'm kind of naturally intrigued to be like, I can't wait to see more of you. I can't wait to see what stories that you have to tell. I loved meeting her family towards the end. I thought that was a really great example of a first season that kind of went under the radar, but still did what it needed to do, you know?
Yeah, and I think that there are also sweet spots when it comes to casting of people, housewives who people feel connected with, who feel of this earth, who feel humble in some way, or like they understand that this is the land of excess, but may or may not be connected to their real life. And one of the greatest examples to that, to me, is Heather Gay, who is also now having quite an intense reunion cycle. I'm curious for your thoughts on what you think is happening there. And do you think that Heather and Whitney are being successful in their strategy to take down Barlow at all costs?
You know, they're not being successful. I mean, what unfortunately, and I hate to say this because I do like both of them. And I thought Heather had such a successful first season. Mm-hmm. And I was interested in watching her Mormon storyline this season. I found that fascinating to me personally. But when she gets to reunion, it's like all like she just goes wild. Like within the first 5 minutes, she was already at Barlow. Right. And I think the same thing with Kim Kardashian. It's like, you just need to lay back and let other people hang themselves. Let other people do the work for you. If Lisa is good or bad, she will show us. You do not need to throw it out there with all of your evidence, all of that, because then it gets weird and you start then rooting for Lisa Barlow. Like the political aspect of this is wild because you're like, you have it right here. It's handed to you. It is handed to you. You can walk away with this if you think about it like a game, like Survivor, and you're ruining it. You're seeming so desperate almost to be like, this is a bad person, you've got to see. And it's therefore making you a bad person in some ways.
That's such a good point. And it is one of those things of like watching the reunion so far. I'm like, oh man, I really feel for Barlow. Even when like Meredith's doing her like low key, honestly, designer resale, like I am an attorney, I'm going to speak slowly, I'm going to take my time, which Andy was very into, as was I, to be honest. But
Meredith's building her case. Andy was very impressed.
She just kept saying, she was like, as if she could not, you know, make her voice softer and more controlled, here we are. But, you know, the points with bad weather just really made me feel for Lisa, because I felt like she had cause to say, these people are just after me.
Yes.
And the fact that Jen Shaw is coming out of this fucking reunion smelling like a goddamn rose shows you that this is kind of fucked.
You know, and that's the funniest thing, because I went into this season like a lot of us did.
Right.
Where I'm like, Jen Shaw is the stupidest person in the world to do this show. Why would you ever do this show right now? Wow, stupid. And she's on such a wacky cast, on such a wacky season that, like, I mean, she assaulted Lisa Barlow on a Sprinter van at some point, and we're still kind of like, well, she's kind of funny. All these other people are wacky. Like, you know, she's a perfect example of laying back when you need to lay back and letting other people hang themselves. And I'll tell you what, though, this is what makes good con artists. Guys, like, whether you believe she's innocent or guilty, I mean, like, allegedly, we'll see that case being argued, which now I'm really fascinated to see the argument. But you got to realize the things that she's accused of doing take somebody that's really amazing at what they do, that's really smart, that's really like full of charisma. all of these things. Think about it. You know, so I think that it is interesting to see Jen do this. But I mean, hell, I even found myself today. She released merchandise and I was like, that's ballsy. Oh, she released. Oh, she released a whole. And then there was like a satin bass, like a baseball jacket.
About it. I really want it.
Oh, I was kind of like, do I need that? Like, I was like, how bizarre is that? I thought I was like, that kind of. Do you think that would look good on a guy? Like, I was like,
I think it would. I absolutely posted it and was like, wait, I genuinely want this satin bomber. It's low key adorable. What is happening here? It's the absolute Bravo upside down. I don't know what to say. I'm not proud of myself, but like, it is well done.
I compare Salt Lake to a David Lynch movie this season. Like, it's just like, I don't, I was like, you know, like certain points I felt like, was I dreaming? Did I wake up into this episode? Like, there were so many things that happened that I was just so confused about, and it seems to be continuing on in the reunion. And I got to tell you, Lisa Barlow, the first season, I was not a Lisa Barlow fan. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, you know, Whitney and Heather are turning me into a Jen Shaw fan. And just the
Jen
worst
Shaw
thing that,
fan or Lisa Barlow?
Sorry, Lisa Barlow fan. Okay. Sorry, Lisa Barlow. Yeah. The worst thing that could happen for Heather and Whitney is for them to be called bad weather. It's like when you start leaning into your catchphrase, we saw it with Dorinda, you know, like clip, or, you know, like when you start leaning too heavily into your own catchphrase, it's always, you know, you want to let us do that work for you. You don't need to call yourself bad, like bad weather starting.
Yeah. And I don't, it's like there, this is the problem with reunion receipts. Is that you get so focused in the, I want to say that you're lying, that they completely remove any sensitivity to a situation like Cameron's passing, asking questions of whether or not he's on the board. That proves that he had been invited for nefarious reasons, but it's like,
guys, a man died. A man died.
A man died and he like had a connection to the foster care system. Is this really what we want to be fighting about right now? Like, this is the thing?
It should be the end of it once you say that a man has died, but they're arguing. I mean, that's why the show is so wild. Like, it is, I wish I've watched these shows all my life and I can't even make heads or tails of some of the things that I see. And it scares me that we have one more. It scares me that I have to watch another one on Sunday. I'm like, can I handle it? You know?
Yeah, and it's also the thing about Salt Lake, and I don't know what to say about the reunion cycle. I actually am enjoying it, I think, more than a lot of people are. But I don't think it's, like, iconic, but I am obsessed with all of Lisa Barlow's responses, so maybe yes. But the thing with Salt Lake is, like, the stakes should be insanely high. Like, they should be Erica Jane high, if not higher, because Erica was not actually charged. And yet they're not. Meanwhile, New Jersey is happening, and the stakes on New Jersey to me are multifaceted, multi-layered, and incredibly, incredibly high. You have allegations of cheating. This week we have rumors and gossip about allegations relating to domestic violence. You have family struggle. You have this person called me like a girl, little girl bitch or whatever the fuck it was. Like, there's a lot happening. There's some, like, not misogyny, but definitely gendered responsibility. There's avoidance. There's marital strife. There's
trust. I mean, the first episode had Joey Gorga talking about jacking off a dog. Like, I mean, like, right then and there, I don't remember his stand-up act? That's like Vietnam for you. You blacked it out. You didn't even. He was like, yo, I see my best friend, my dog over there. He doesn't have opposable thumbs. I'm like, you want me to get that for you, buddy?
Oh my God.
I'm like, did we just do a jet? Like, I was like, watch out, Dave Chappelle. We got Joey Gorga in the house.
Like, Joey Gorga has a thing.
Wouldn't it be crazy if, I keep thinking that, wouldn't it be crazy if Joey Gorga did not do gross jokes? He was actually like a storyteller. He was like, actually like, guys, you know what it is about family? Like, he did like the hour of comedy that changed, like you called your parents afterwards and go, I love you, dad. Like, what if Joey Gorga did that?
I feel like he kind of, not in the sense of being a storyteller, but he is able to communicate an effective narrative strategy, defense, response. He just also inserts dick and fart jokes in there, as all of the guys do on New Jersey. But at the end of the day, he is able to effectively communicate how he is feeling from an emotional perspective in a way that Teresa and also P.S. fucking Louie, I don't think could do. It's wild when you think of the fact that these were two people raised by two parents who have such diametrically different ways of responding, sometimes very similar, very guttural, very like, this is exactly how I feel, and so I'm going to act it out as a physical response. But Joe is also able to talk on an emotionally mature basis that Teresa just simply cannot or refuses to, which is interesting to see. I like seeing the guys talking about things that sort of matter, you know?
No, I totally agree with you, but I also think we're giving Joey Gorga too much credit yeah. because Teresa just can't do it at all. Just because Joey Gorga can do it 10% well doesn't mean we should celebrate. Like, we always have it easy. We're always celebrated for like really 100%. Small shit. And we're mm-hmm. always like, but that's so classy. And he looks great in a tank top. And it's like, so, but like the guys, the Jersey has to watch out because the guys we're seeing like kind of the inner world of how guys work. It's mm-hmm. what Summer House and Southern Charm wishes they could do. Cause we dance around Craig and Austin trying to be like dudes when they're trying to nail everything that's on a college campus. But like Jersey, you actually see the inner workings of a man as they get older of like, hey, how you doing? Making jokes over here, you know, and then Bill went against the grain. Like, yo, your wife, you let her say bad stuff to me. You know, and like it's really kind of fascinating to watch, but we have to remember that these are shows about women. So if we want to have a show about men, let's have a show about men. But right now, I feel like the show about men is getting equal focus and is almost a little more intriguing because Teresa is a brick wall now. And if you're going to be a brick wall, we don't need you. And I know this is going to get a lot of hate, but Ooh. We maybe don't need you on the show. Maybe we need a Candy and the Gang spinoff, you know, because you're not willing to share your life anymore. And Louis knows exactly what he signed up for. He's a living mood ring on his face. And he knows, two weeks ago he was purple. Last week he was red. I mean, this guy is a different color every week. But he knew what he was walking into. He knew, we all knew everything about Louis because of Instagram bloggers and stuff like that. So he did know, but she needs to share that with us then. Unfortunately.
What do you want her to share? Like her actual responses to seeing the video, which she said she didn't, which we all know she probably did. Actually, she might not have. She might have honestly been like, this is a vendetta. Whatever this is isn't real. And it's not. And it's been edited. And he told me the truth, which is, of course, the exact opposite of what the video actually shows. And I want it to be a supportive partner, so I'm not going to look at it. Like, what do you think comes out of this?
Well, I mean, if you saw Teresa on Ultimate Girls Trip, we saw that Louis gave her a card every day, just like very Brooks and Vicky Gunvalson to fill up her love tank. And so that was like a big red flag for me. Now, I will say also, I saw, every time I see Louis, he does say something that I'm kind of like, oh, okay. Like he was like, Teresa, listen to your brother. Just listen. You just got to listen. You got to, telling her to listen, which is an encouraging thing. You know, it's telling her to open your ears. But we have all of this proof and this evidence of him doing the same pattern of behavior with all of these women. So even I get confused sometimes because he's done it to all of these other women. And then in my head, I'm like, well, maybe she's the right woman for him. And, he seems so into like self-care. But I will say what really disturbed me about him was that explanation to Margaret about the men's retreat mm-hmm. of like, I was with a woman who was not a good woman, and I had to be brave enough to tell her I did not want to marry her. And the video evidence says, I would like to marry you and come home with you if that is okay with you. And we're being gaslit. Like, it's like completely gaslit by this guy. But Teresa, there's just no there anymore sometimes, I feel.
Yeah, and I think Teresa, coming out of her marriage is almost a little bit entranced by what some of us perceive as toxic positivity of like, I care about feelings and I have them and I'm in control. At the end of the day, Louis's positivity and introspection to me is less about forward movement on an emotional vulnerability maturity level and more about control. He is trying his best to keep himself under control. And so he is thoughtful and or precise in a way that to me is less connected with a genuine like spiritual or emotional journey and more connected with what he even told us the purpose of these fucking retreats, the purpose of the retreat was, which is to like reverse the anger essentially that you have on your partner against yourself, which is concerning to me. And it's also concerning. It's like, where do we draw the line with the scenes that we've seen this week? You know, there have been conversations about Jen's scene with her daughter. There are conversations about Margaret's scene with her mom. But it's also just the idea of, like, at the end of the day, is there going to be the possibility to have a discussion where people don't feel like they also have to emotionally arm themselves? I don't know. Or is the purpose of the show that it's not possible? Like, we're, what we're watching is a continued fallout of that.
Well, I think that's the pivot of Housewives in general. What we, you know, the Housewives, I think, which are amazing, is that you always get that nugget of truth, that all that thing that you can hang on to or that you've been experiencing in your own life. And you're like, wow, that's almost worth all of this craziness, which I also love. But there's always that kind of ultimate truth of falling out of love with your partner, or my husband cheated on me, this or that. Everybody's gone through these kind of basic things. So I feel like those, that real spot gives it a lot of allowance to then kind of go off the rails. But Jersey's a really weird thing because it's been on so long. And I think OC suffers from this as well, where we're now, it's like a Godfather saga. It's like, it goes so deep. It goes so, like, we always will remember the christening episode. We will always remember Joey Gorga's pain about his father and Joe Giudice. Like, we saw Tree's girls grow up. Like, we've seen this now. It adds this level of intensity that sometimes it makes you then refresh to go to Real Housewives of Miami on Peacock and go, okay, this is it. Like, we're dealing with really serious stuff still. New faces, some old faces, two-part reunion, perfect. I don't have to, like, wait two more weeks. And, like, it's not like a four-week, you know. There's perfect. Something beautiful about the Real Housewives franchise that I think Miami is seeing right now. But in the other, like Jersey, we're so entrenched in the past.
Yeah, it's a good point. And yet, I feel like Orange County feels pretty light this season, which I'm really enjoying. And with New Jersey, I am thoroughly partaking, consuming, enjoying, discussing what is happening, because there is still a lot of emotional human connectivity, even if it's coming through the lens of anger or rage. Like that scene that I don't know that we've seen before and will see again, of two women, Dolores and Jen, talking and saying, listen, we were both cheated on while 9 months pregnant, and we took different paths after that. And there's a reckoning that's happening where one of the women literally, like, I wrote it as a note to myself that I absolutely can't access because that would be too great, where Jen says, what happens if a person changes their mind about moving on? Which is so powerful and essentially unanswerable. Like, the answer to it is, are you willing to do the active work of acknowledging that you maybe want to change your mind, or maybe never believed that thing that you did so feverishly a decade ago because you wanted to keep your marriage calm? Like, that is, I don't know who couldn't find a connection, a feeling of empathy for a woman in that moment who's thinking to herself, like, wow, maybe I am allowed to feel mad, angry, sad about my husband cheating on me at the absolute most physically and emotionally vulnerable time that a woman could have. Like, she's literally preparing her body to give birth, and her husband at that most delicate time is cheating on her, and then she has to be in the position to take responsibility for deciding to move on. Like, I'm curious for your thoughts on that.
Well, I mean, what a mind fuck, first off, you know, and that scene, and then also the scene with Dolores and her parents this week, where she had to break it to him with about, I'm not with David anymore. God. And the first reaction is, oh, that's not good. He was like family. He was treated this family so good. And I thought it was such this amazing moment of a woman saying, yo, like, doesn't my happiness, like, doesn't my wants and needs mean, like, we can all agree he's a good guy. Like she says, we can all agree he's a good guy. He cares. And, like, I thought it was such a fascinating question of, okay, but what happens when that's enough? That's not enough. What happens when I do want to grow old with somebody? What happens when I do want to binge watch a show with, and I have somebody that wants to work 18-hour days? I'm getting into, you know, different stages of my life. am I allowed to want something different? Am I not allowed to want something different because I'm a woman? Because you think he's a protector? Like, you know, and this is somebody that's on TV that I'm assuming makes a decent paycheck, and her parents are like, oh, Dolores. Oh, there was almost this at beginning. By the end, they were like proud of her and stuff. But at the beginning, I was like, are they going to give this woman that actually made this very educated choice based on her feelings guff about this? To me, that was like eye-opening. But also, we can relate to that, right? We tell our parents hard things, too. I remember telling about my divorce to my parents and having to break that to them and how hard I was so scared and how hard, you know, or bringing it to my sister who's very religious and saying, well, God doesn't want this. God doesn't want it.
She said that to you?
She did, yeah. Okay. Yeah. And that was really hard. I will always remember that. And so you see those things. But that's what I love about The Housewives is we can laugh and we can be silly about all these things. But there's still this kind of ultimate truth that it still does. The camera does, by some kind of weird kind of magic, pick up on these really these real moments that we can really relate to. And I don't really think I'm being too sappy about it. I really do relate to something in all of these shows at some point, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I actually was thinking about you knowing that we were recording today when I was rewatching New Jersey, because I was honestly curious about your thoughts, really, about the Jen and Bill situation, without knowing the details of your divorce, just knowing that we've talked about your divorce and previous marriage on prior eps of AG, as well as your show, which I highly encourage that people listen to. But I was curious for your thoughts on that, because I think it's what do you do when you realize you don't necessarily trust yourself, which might be a little bit of a curve and it might not be entirely appropriate when it comes to Jen, but like, I think of it a little with Jen in the sense of like, she didn't necessarily trust her own worth, or she was told that her worth was secondary to making sure her husband felt comfortable, or her job and goals to keep the family together, from a cultural perspective, just from a,
that's what it brings up, the cultural perspective.
Yeah,
it's a different, you also have to bring that into it too, right? She talked about like, well, our people are going to look down on Bill now. What about you? Like, what about you? Like, they're going to look down on Bill. They're going to disrespect Bill. Well, like, Bill disrespected you. But because of the culture she was raised in, I found that really fascinating and something very foreign to me. Because luckily, and this is just like a white straight male would be, you know, I have grown up with such privilege. And I don't mean in wealth. I was middle class my entire life. But I do mean the other privileges of, you know, if a marriage wasn't working out, I am able to walk away with that with just, we hurt each other. I wasn't hurting the community. I wasn't hurting, and the way us Irish Catholics do it is, you know, like that's, you know what I'm saying? Like, so it is interesting. You add that layer to it and you're like, that to me is fascinating as well, because she is dealing with so many other people's thoughts and feelings that her own feelings are secondary.
Her own feelings, not only are they secondary, but they shouldn't exist to begin with. Like, the pressure that she is under, even when on the after show she's talking about how everyone else is wrong and she doesn't give a shit what anybody else thinks, and like, that's all fine and good, but we're watching these scenes where she's acknowledging, and I say this without judgment, the enormous pressure that she's under. And yet at the end of the episode, or conversely at the end of the episode, Bill is given a modicum of pressure in the sense of Evan being like, yeah, your wife wasn't just curious. She was quite literally trying to harm my marriage and family. And Bill just absolutely immediately leaves. And it's kind of interesting when you watch and think of the burden of stuff that Jen is carrying, of things that she herself did that she needs to take responsibility for or not, and also the burden of the shame that she has attached to this big heavy secret she couldn't even tell her close family and friends. And then you look at Bill, who's just dead silent when shit happens. He's like left his body. is a bad friend to his friend Joe, is a bad partner to his wife Jen, but there's sort of no way for him to win, and yet he loses doubly as much by being quiet. And then in the last scene, he's like, well, I'm trying to say some bullshit and they're not going for it, so I'm just gonna walk out. And it is a little bit of a window into, like, not to take it to this level, but why not, like, the things that guys are able to do that women, especially a woman whose job it is to, you know, be on this show and in some ways carry this show, what they have to kind of go through and endure. Like, there's a symbolism here that I think is really kind of interesting.
Male friendships can sometimes be so simplistic. All they want to do is just drink some shots and pat each other on the back. And maybe a little homoerotic, who knows, you know? Like, but just like the camaraderie of saying stupid jokes, of not taking feelings too seriously, of not, you know, there's all this shit that, like, you know, Iron John about men. And you get to see that in effect here. But I find it interesting that, you know, there is this whole other level, this dark level where, you know, you see Bill in the shadows of having to face what he did all of this time ago. But isn't that always the case with guys, is that sometimes we just, we learn lessons in the hardest way, because our thing is usually, I don't really believe that people are evil, but I also believe that guys don't want to cause pain. Mm-hmm. And sometimes that causes double pain. Mm-hmm. Because they're just trying to cover up for the stupid shit their urges had them do. And then now you see Bill having to face it 10 years later. And like you said, doubly be punished for it in certain ways with the guy group, with Jennifer. And this is where the real lesson is. Like, this is where you really hope he is listening to what the universe, you know, because I've done things where I thought I was protecting somebody's feelings. And in the end, it was like, no, you just ended up, I ended up doubly hurting me. You know, but no, not to make myself a victim in that kind of sense. But you know what I'm saying? It's like you learn the lesson the hard way. And I believe, unfortunately, sorry to all the men listening, sometimes we really, it's not just an old, you know, we do have thick skulls. We don't learn lessons easy. Like, it takes a long time to actually, to be brave, to learn to do what you're supposed to do, to learn, you know, it's really fascinating to me. And that's why those scenes are great. But I sometimes wonder, like, but I also want to make sure we highlight the women's perspective, because that's what Housewives is.
Do you think that Bill has learned, what lessons do you think Bill has learned? Even
I'm scared, Sarah. What I'm scared about is that, you know, I was talking about this on the podcast this week, how we sexually, like, you know, we see this, you know, gentleman Zelensky, you know, doing this amazing job. What a hero. And immediately you go on Twitter, you're like, I'd love to blow that dude. That guy is sexy as hell. Yes. Like, you know, one guy does like a really good thing, you sexualize him immediately. And what scares me is we did the same thing with Men Housewives, right? We're like, oh, fuck. Am I crazy? Is Bill Hayden hot? Like, you know, we started like, hey, Shane, I think Shane Simpson's all of a sudden looking good to me because he was nice to Emily this episode. And I find it very interesting how we just kind of give that away and we immediately turn it to those. So what scares me, though, is that we did that so much with Bill. It's like, I do now question, because I never thought Bill was a cheater. Now I question, oh shit, has he done this a lot? And has it gotten even worse? Like, one of the things in Ultimate Girls Trip, they were talking about Mauricio, and Kyle said, Mauricio doesn't even know how to work Instagram. I'm like, yeah, he does. He knows. She's like, I'll pick up his phone. There's tons of boob pics on there. He's like, he knows. He knows how to, like, you know, it's like, he knows. I mean, like, I'm not saying that makes him a cheater or something like that, but, you know, it's always the easiest then to go to the lowest, like, well, men are fucking idiots. You know, like, that's the, hey, Mauricio doesn't know how to operate a phone. Like, that's always the easiest way to explain it, because the truth of that would be harder.
Yeah, and I wonder, this has, like, got me thinking a bunch of stuff, all of which is slightly insane, but when it comes to, like, the rumors that Jen spread about Evan, like, or the rumors that she heard about that she was trying to find more information about, there is something to be said for the fact that obviously it's harmful to their marriage. It adds a lot of stress. There are kids involved in everything else. But, like, in the case of Evan, there is a way to look at it to be like, because he's sort of lusted after, this is a possibility, which doesn't help Jackie in any way. That doesn't help when you hear these things said about your husband publicly, and then this is going to be a storyline, this like ruse of a rumors of an affair or something else. But it is also interesting that if you think about Evan's perspective, or even what Jen's doing, like, of course, where there's, you know, smoke, there's fire. There is an element there. I don't know how to describe it. I don't know how to encapsulate it, if that makes any sense. There's just like an element there of this man is seen as, is being sexualized, is seen as being like worthy of other women's attention that doesn't necessarily happen with women. Like, the wives,
yes,
of those,
yeah,
people,
yeah, yeah,
or
yes,
the ways,
yes,
that women would be looked at in those cases where it's, well, you're a slut, or you're whatever the language is, the reputation, the stakes, it's still for guys seen as terrible for their marriage, trouble for their family, but also like something to be desired.
Yeah, it's interesting because, like, you know, we're hearing a lot of stuff about Evan too, of like, wow, he really went after Bill all the time. You know, like, we're hearing things of like, Frank Catania says they're what, you know, like, we heard this and this, and Evan's like, you better shut the F up, Bill. Like, you get the F out of it. Like, I'm throwing it down right now. You know, Evan's really passionate. But what's hard about that is that we, and I'm myself like this, is that I like to paint the world in good and bad. Mm. And what's scarier to realize is that the world is gray. You know, it's not black and white. There's so much gray area that we can see Evan. Like, this can be the same person, you guys. Evan can seriously be there and care that his wife has an ED issue, that can sit there and go, I'm so proud of you, honey. I want you to talk this out. I want, you know, be there and really be in it. But he also possibly could have cheated. And those two things can be true at the same time. But I think it makes it easier for us as a society to say it's black and white. Evil or bad. You're bad or you're good.
Well, I mean, that also gets into the question of marriage, of when you stay in a marriage after infidelity or any kind of loss of trust or respect. Like, it's easy to say I would walk away in that situation. But what if that isn't the entirety of your spouse's character? Like, you have the right and ability and should have the right to make the decision to try to work it through. But the problem is, if you don't work it through and you just continue on, like, what is the loss there? And when it comes to black and white versus gray, I actually thought that Evan in that final scene with Bill was working in the land of gray. He just was holding Bill accountable. Bill was trying to say some bullshit about how Jen's a good person and she wasn't meaning anything nefarious, and it's quite obvious to literally everyone, including Jen, that she was up to some no good. And Evan was like, that's bullshit. Like, he does also say, like, she's a bad person or whatever, but, like, he's like, that's not true. What you're saying to me, you think that you can just do these one-offs because you're with the guys and you think it's a safe space to be a fucking liar. And what I'm telling you right now is it's not. What would have been more black and white to me almost would have been Evan just eating it and, like, not saying anything. But Evan was like, yeah, cool, we're actually not going to go that way. I'm not going to sit here and allow you to gaslight, everyone's favorite word, my experiences, especially when your wife has not said I'm sorry to me. So not only has she not taken responsibility with me personally, but now we're pretending that what happened wasn't real. And I do think that's an example of gray that I thought was effective and necessary.
Well, you know what's funny about that scene too, and this is a little off topic. Well, no, it's on the topic, but Tiki Barber, yes. The new house husband.
Oh my
now, Tiki
God.
Barber, if you know that
dead
history,
fucking
he
quiet.
Left. He left his
8 months pregnant.
If you can go back and watch those scenes, you see. I swear to God, I'm not making this up. You see the realization of, like, what did I sign up for? This is gonna come to me eventually. Like, and luckily, his wife's not really making a lot of waves on this show, so we're not really going in on him yet. But one day it will come, and he is like, Tiki's literally like, what the? I told my wife I just wanted her to bring in some money. I didn't know it was going to, like, he's sitting there and, like, Frank Catan, like, hey, you know, it's hysterical to watch this guy in scenes now because he's realizing that, like, wait, I thought it was just the wives. They talk about what the guys do too. Like, he looks scared.
I would love to see, genuinely, no, I'm not, like, fucking with you. I would love to see a scene of Tiki talking with Bill. It will never happen, but maybe we'll see it next week. Or Tiki talking to Tracy and having a conversation and threading that needle, because it couldn't have been more public. It was the cover of the New York Post seemingly every day. He lost work from it. You could argue he lost his career over it.
Yes.
He was doing well for himself after retiring, and it all went away because of the question of morality and the question of, you know, moral character. It was a very big gossip tabloid story that did not seem to go away for a while. And he's now in a very specific small bubble kind of world that does also get a lot of attention. I would be curious as to his thoughts now that he's had some distance and maybe, you know, thought about it from a different perspective, maybe while watching this other story play out. It would be really fascinating.
I mean, it would be. I just think the human nature is to cover up and not face. and, you know, what we're seeing right now. I'll be very curious to see how the season ends, even though I think they're about to film the reunion, which means we might be close to a very shortened season. But I mean, these are questions to me. That's like what's really intriguing about Jersey is that it's not your typical Housewives show anymore. Like now it is a family show. It is these things, but it's also facing on these really big issues that I think a lot of us have dealt with. And it's really scary to watch. And it's, you know, I'm very curious to see where we end up with Jennifer and Bill, because it seems like, you know, Jennifer's going to try to point out everybody else except for the calls coming from inside the house, Jennifer, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah, and I wonder, you know, I posited this on a new Patreon episode with Damian Bellino that just went up. We talked about, you know, the comparisons between the Housewives of New Jersey and the second season of Love is Blind. I wonder with Jen, a little bit of where her brain was when she was, I talked about this more in detail on the Patreon, but it sort of occurred to me while we were having this discussion that, you know, there are areas of a subconscious that has to be at work in work when she's doing these things, because they are so perfectly aligned with the biggest secret that we know of that she didn't want anyone to know, that she refused to tell. And I wonder with Jen, when she's doing that subconscious work, like how much of it as an act of distraction was it to focus on these rumors, not just because if people are looking here, they're not ever going to think about looking there, but also because maybe she thought it was safe in the sense that the Bill stuff was real, but my guess is she probably always knew the Evan stuff was not. And like the way that she almost had to maybe gamble or strategize or pacify herself in her own mind, in her head with that, or maybe didn't understand it or acknowledge it, and this could all be entirely wrong, but there's like a form of offense play, pretending football, but there's like a defensiveness that you could take in thinking about why she did that, knowing about what we know about Bill's affair from a decade ago. And there's also the idea that, like, I think something else was going on there. Like, how much of it was trying to punish Evan because she couldn't punish Bill? How much of it was trying to distract the cast from this thing over here? How much of it was trying to hold on to any sense of power that she had, because the game of power in Housewives is very different from the game of power in your potential relationship or marriage? Like, I think there was a lot going on. And with Jen, I just don't know that she's able to have this space to really reflect on that. Like, I don't know that she has the capacity. Maybe that's why she gets, and this isn't an insult, maybe that's why she gets along with Teresa, because it's always going to be superficial. Maybe that's why she's not able to have the kind of relationships that Marge and Melissa and Jackie seem to have. Like, maybe that's why she gets along. Dolores is kind of the bridge, but like, maybe there's an air there where she feels safety in that, because Teresa's never going to ask her the questions that the other women are. You know,
well, I mean, listen, there's a part of me that wonders why she even, like, because if you watch that first episode, it wasn't like Marge's question. It wasn't like, you know, a few good mm-hmm. men of like, you can't handle the truth. Like, it was like she came out with it. I was like, did she do this to distract from that nose? Like, did she distract that from that? Like, no, I'm not joking. I'm like, she had a Vicki Gunvalson moment where Vicki came back before her facelift had settled. I'm like, why? Like, Margaret's questioning was no different than it has been other seasons. Why now? It wasn't like, oh, wow, Margaret got that out of her. It was almost like, I question why it came out when it did. I question that because we've seen Margaret go harder on Jennifer Aiden, and now this is what does it? And you could even tell, like, I think it was real because it looked like Margaret was surprised that she finally got an admission out of her.
I'm not totally tracking this. Say this again.
Okay, so what I'm saying is, you know, the first episode of the season, Jennifer uh-huh. Aiden comes out with the right. fact that it is true, but it right. wasn't, it was a rep. It wasn't somebody that worked office there, manager, you idiot. Right. We've heard this rumor before, right? We've heard this rumor before. Why in that first episode did Jen's one of the stronger cast members, really one of the point. People, why all of a sudden did she come out with it? It wasn't like Margaret was questioning her any deeper or more right. intense that's than she has in other point. Seasons. Like, that's what I question, is that, like, I feel, and I hate to be a conspiratorial because I really only like my conspiracies in Bravo, not in QAnon, but mm-hmm. but I do question of, like, was this something that Jen said, if all else fails, I'll come out with this. If all else, you know, at the end of the day, I have this in my back pocket. We do know Jennifer Aydin is one of those people that really campaigned to be on Housewives. She bought her house that she lives in now just so she could look better on the Housewives. I do question, because I just don't think that Margaret, in that moment, Jennifer was so good and so conditioned at dealing with these ladies. That was the moment that got it out of you?
You know what? I totally disagree with you, but I love this conversation. I don't think that Jennifer, I think she was probably exhausted. When you have been carrying the weight and the shame of this thing for a decade, sometimes it's like the needle in the haystack. Like, you wouldn't know it's there, but it is there and it is painful AF. And she might have just felt like, let me just release it. Like,
I love that. I love
that. In this moment, I'm just going to release it, because why am I holding on to this anymore? And maybe if I finally say it, it will go away, which, like, when has that ever been the case? But, like, I think that there is some element of the fact that if we are to believe her at her word, which I do, that she really didn't talk about this with anyone, I think that she was always carrying the baggage. She was carrying it on behalf of her marriage. Her husband expressed no interest in helping support in any way the baggage that he gave to her as a special baby gift, you know?
What I'm curious about, though, is what she feels now about it. Does she regret that moment? Does she regret that slip up? Or was that slip up a gift? Was that slip up, it made us so much stronger? I finally got to get all of this out. I got so many people rallying around me. I would love to know what she feels about it now, having lived through this season that we are still watching.
I think that's an awesome question, honestly, Ryan, and I would love to hear her answer. And listen, I'd love for you to come back. This is so much fun.
Oh, well, by the way, you're going to come back. You're going to come back on my show next week so we can continue this deep conversation.
I would love it.
I like this because mine's a podcast is usually a Joey Gorga fart joke podcast. I get to talk deeper feelings and theories with you. So I can't wait to come. I can't wait to keep this going next week on my podcast.
Love it. I'm so excited. I love a pod swap. And you guys need to subscribe to Ryan's pod, because every episode is a delight. But I always love guesting. And there are a ton of episodes of us together on on this one. I think like, on that one.
Yeah.
In our
archives. Tons of. Yeah.
So, Ryan, tell the people, where can they follow you on social? Tell them a little backstory about the pod.
My podcast is called Everything Iconic with Danny Pellegrino. And
congrats on the
something...
book.
I have a book out this week. It's very exciting. I didn't really want to know. It's called So Bad It's Good. I release like 4 to 5 episodes a week. There's a Patreon. There's an Instagram where I just do silly memes. The whole thing is there. It's a family at this point. And I do the same thing that Sarah does. Sarah just does it more eloquently. But we talk about pop culture on Mondays with Sophie Ross as my co-host. We usually have, like this week, I had a 2.5 hour interview with Tom Sandoval. Like, I went to Tom and Ariana's house and he showed me around his van. I mean, it was one of the most familiar episodes. Like, it was one of the episodes that was kind of in my bucket list, even though, like, it's interesting to hear people's opinions on Tom. But I think if you listen to this, it would just be, we get to talk about Kristen and Jax and Drive, the movie. We get to talk about so many things. I had Maya Allen from Summer House on yesterday. So there's something for everybody, but like, yeah, just search Sarah's name, start there if you're interested. But also, I get the podcasts are very personal. So what's cool is that there's something literally on podcasting for everybody. The point is just listen to something. Like, let's keep this going. This is the coolest art form that I've ever been involved in, you know?
I mean, couldn't agree with you more. And speaking of
Until tonight.
It's a series finale of podcasting here at AGHQ. Speaking of keeping things going, you guys, Andy's Girls Live, the 300th episode celebration.
Wait, is Evan Ross Katz really going to be there? Is that really your...
Evan Ross Katz, the Doris Kearns Goodwin.
That's huge.
Will be next
Doris, week. I love Doris Kearns. Actually, one of my favorite authors. Oh, anyways, but
she's
Evan
incredible.
Ross Katz is a genius.
A true Bravo historian, will be with me on stage co-hosting. It's going to be Saturday, March 26th at Club Cumming here in New York City. Tickets are $20 in advance, $25 at the door. We are highly encouraging advance tickets.
Well, you sold out last time, so.
And we sold out last time, so we are highly encouraging that people buy tickets in advance. A link in show notes. It's andysgirls.eventbrite.com. And my birthday is at midnight that night. So,
well, now it's getting weird. Now it's now you're just, it feels like you're wanting gifts now. People are gonna have to bring gifts.
I wouldn't be against it.
I don't mind if you tease. We've talked about doing a live show in Los Angeles, me and you together.
I hope that will happen. But guys,
this show.
Right. The way to make more live shows happen, including a fabulous collab with you and I, is to go to AG300. It's the best way to support the future of live events happening and also the future of the pod. So I would really appreciate it if you're in the New York City, or if you're not, hop on a flight. You know what I'm saying? Travel's back. Everything's great. We're all vaccinated. And speaking of all things fabulous, a new episode on the Andy Scrolls Patreon with Damien Bellino, OG of the AG, 45-minute bonus episodes. We talk about Real Housewives of New Jersey. We talk a little bit about Miami. We talk about Love is Blind and so much poor. So much more. Patreon.com/AndysGirls for all that and more. We didn't have a chance to do small business lady satchels, guys. So look for those on the next episode. Can't wait to highlight more women owned and operated small businesses. Because Ryan, I don't know if you know, but this month is Women Appreciation History Month for women stuff.
It's every month for me, Sarah.
Wow. And here we are swiping right for that. There we go. Follow me on Instagram if you don't already. And what is it? At Dame Callie.
I just forgot. Sarah, I'm not you. I don't know. You looked at me like I was a producer. I was like, I was like, am I in trouble? Like,
where's my producer? And this was a delight. Thank you so much for coming on.
It's always a delight.
You're so great.
Yes.
You're so great.
Thank you so much for even inviting me on. You have one of the best listenerships out there, for real. Like, you have, and no, it's funny, you have the smartest listenership.
Oh, 100%.
No, like, people always like, it is the deepest conversation. Yours gives me chuckles. Like, they'll be like, yours is fun. Yours is fun. Sarah goes deep.
I mean, I have to say, I get satchels of gold, listener thoughts and feels, questions and concerns, which you can DM to me on Instagram at Dame Gally. You can email me, andyscrollshow@gmail.com. And I'm doing a Patreon episode this weekend talking about, I think, like maybe 10 satchels that I've gotten this week about Shannon, about Salt Lake City, about, I think, Heather Dubrow, New Jersey, a bunch of stuff. So stay tuned for that episode. And that's all thanks to the AGs out there. I thought you were taking a photo just now. I was like, we're not doing
I was
that. I look like shit. Okay,
sorry. I'm not gonna post it.
On that note, guys, I hope you are all hanging in there, and that this was a little bit of a break for you, because it definitely felt like one for myself. We will talk to you later, guys. Bye-bye.